rolls through me. I remember watching these same constellations with my Netherling guide years ago. No wonder it came through in my art.
I hope that's not a storm coming,
Jeb whispers against my nape, arms tensing around me.
This boat won't hold up to thrashing waves.
Tucking my hand absently into my skirt pocket, I prod the sponge my guide wanted me to keep. It's only a constellation, I answer, and Jeb doesn't question how I know. Without speaking, we watch the display overhead until it bursts into a thousand glittering colors, like silent fireworks. When it's gone, nothing remains but common white stars.
Wow,
we both say. After a few quiet minutes, Jeb relaxes, and his breath rasps, slow and even, against the back of my head. Although it's Jeb's body keeping me warm, the last things I envision before falling asleep are inky black eyes and a spread of satiny wings. Chapter 8. Octobenus. The Alice nightmare finds me while I'm sleeping. I'm not alone this time. Jeb carries the stolen sword, and we race down the path toward the caterpillar's lair. The thorns that once snarled and ripped my pinafore elongate into leafy eels. The serpentine strands wrap around our legs and carry us upside down to the chessboard. Our bodies freeze into game pieces. A hand appears, wearing a black glove, and moves us from square to square. It picks me up to claim checkmate, but Jeb comes alive, slashing at the fingers with the sword to free me. The bloody digits fall one by one and morph into caterpillars. Jeb and I race back to the path. The mushroom waits in the center, cloaked in a web. The caterpillars beat us there. They tunnel into the cocoon, filling it until it writhes, a living, breathing thing. A razor-sharp black blade slices from within the webbed casing. Whatever's inside is coming out. I awaken, startled, and blink against the sun's brightness. My hands are clenched into fists. What woke me up? I was so close to unveiling the face in the cocoon, the one I've been waiting years to see. Yawning, I focus on the here and now. Sometime in the night, I must have turned toward Jeb in the rowboat, and he pulled me against himself, tucking me under his chin. All I see now is a close-up of his tank. He's still asleep. His heavy breath rustles my hair, slow and rhythmic. His arms clutch my waist. Yesterday comes back to me in pieces. The rabbit hole, the mutant flower garden, the ocean of tears. I snuggle into his neck, fingers curled within the sleeves of the tuxedo jacket, determined not to wake him so I can pretend things are simple and perfect for just a few minutes longer. The boat rocks, and I realize that's what woke me. Not a gentle riding on a current movement, more a something heavy sloughed over the edge and is watching us movement. I freeze, as rigid as the wood beneath us. Guttural snuffles fill the air, like those of an asthmatic bulldog. The warmth of sun on my shoulders turns chilly as a shadow falls across us. My heart does a somersault. Before I can belt out a scream, Jeb snaps into action, rolling us toward the bow and jerking us to our feet. He was awake the whole time.
No way,
he says. I wobble with the boat's motion, holding on to Jeb's waistband with one hand and the seat behind me with the other. I peer around him. At first glance, our intruder looks like a walrus. He has two giant tusks with images of snakes and angry flames carved along the ivory. But beneath rolls of blubber, his lower half is a tangle of slithering octopus tentacles covered in suction cups. It's as if someone snapped two different creatures together, creating an octo-walrus. He must weigh over 500 pounds, and his body occupies most of the boat. As huge as he is, and with his tentacles hanging half in and out, the boat should be capsized. Jeb and I should have been flung like stones from a slingshot as soon as he slithered aboard. Instead, the hull is level and drifting along the shining water as if the creature weighs no more than we do. Wonder what Isaac Newton would have to say about the jacked-up physical laws here. Jeb nudges me to sit behind him, but keeps standing, every muscle in his body tense and ready to snap.
What are you?
Our uninvited guest scrapes oozing goop from his eyes with the human fingers on the ends of his flippers.
Fair question, Elfin Knight. I'm an Octobeanish. Now, let me guess your next question. What do I want? For that, there's a simple answer. I want to stop the endless suffering in my belly.
Whiskers, long and blonde against a cinnamon-brown hide, droop under his nostril holes. His tentacles slap the ocean, spritzing us with water. From the chain at his neck, he opens a locket the size of a cigar box and digs something out. He lays a clam in his palm, carefully holding its shell pinched shut.
Good morning, little sea cabbage,
he taunts it.
Still worried about your family?
The clam tries to open its mouth and answer. The Octobeanus repositions his hold to keep it quiet.
Tell you what. If you can staunch my hunger, I'll set all of them free. Willing to give it a try?
Although the clam can't open its mouth wide enough to talk, a pinkish hatchet-shaped muscle slinks out from the crack, like a malformed foot or arm, patting the enormous creature's cheek in a final bid for life. A whimper bursts from my throat. Jeb reaches behind his back and opens his hand. I lace our fingers together. In a rush of blubber and slobber, the Octobeanus forces the shell open, seals his mouth around it, and suctions out the contents with a terrible sucking sound. The clam's excruciating scream echoes in my head, then fades to dreadful silence. I grasp Jeb tighter, trying not to gag.
Nope. Still hungry. Suppose I'll be eating your children next.
Our unwelcome visitor laughs, an ugly grinding sound, then tosses the empty shell overboard. He swats it with a tentacle so it sinks, and the motion makes the boat rock. Jeb's fingers cinch around my wrist as he struggles to stay balanced.
You must be swift with slimy prey like that,
the Octobeanus says.
They're tricksters, always trying to capture you in their death speak. Can you imagine being a slave to a clam's final wish?
He laughs again. Death speak. That phrase from the back of Alice's psych evaluation. I peer around Jeb as the walrusy creature wedges a monocle over his watery left eye.
Now,
he says,
if you would be so kind as to step aside, elf, I might get a better look at your ward.
Jeb's stance tightens.
Not a chance.
The octo-freak drops his monocle.
Those bumbling flowers think that your blood has the power to buy me my fill of bivalves.
His shout rattles over us, through us, carrying the scent of fish and death.
But it's never been an issue of buying them. I'm a hunter. I must capture them. It is my nature. Clams are such crafty creatures, always using their little arms to move about and escape under their beds on the ocean floor. If only it weren't so dark down there, and with my eyes gone so bad, I'm lucky to capture a half dozen before they all hide.
He wipes his mouth with a thick flipper.
But the wise one owns a magic flute that calls my prey from their hiding places. And now, I have a way to barter for it. By offering my blood in exchange,
Jeb guesses. This can't be happening. I don't care how many fights he's been in at home. Even with a Swiss army knife, he doesn't stand a chance against a 500-pound sea monster.
He's not a jeweled elf, I shout from behind Jeb. He's human. Look at his ears.
Jeb squeezes my fingers, a plea to keep quiet.
Doesn't matter either way. Jewels and riches mean nothing to the wise one. But you, little cabbage, he's desperate for your help. Oh, yes. He's been waiting years for you to find your way here.
The statement churns in my head. The flowers said the wise one is the caterpillar. So, he's been waiting for me? Maybe the caterpillar sent the moth and my dark guide to find me and bring me here. Our captor's tentacles writhe along the boat's edges like giant pythons, and the wood creaks.
With you as hostage, I can barter for the flute. He will lay it at my feet for your safe deliverance.
You'll have to kill me to get to her, Jeb says. I jerk on his wrist, but he ignores me. The Octobinus needs his flipper hands.
Ah, a loyal friend. I had one of those many years ago. He was an artisan. He carved my tusks and crafted a beautiful trunk to hold my reserve of clams. Then I learned he was pilfering my supply. So one night as he slept, I captured him.
The tentacles curl around the boat in demonstration.
And locked him in the trunk with the empty shells. I cast the lot into the ocean to muffle his screams. His bones are fish bait now.
I bite my lip to keep from screaming. Our captor laughs.
Dismal, isn't it? You see, if I would be so callous with a friend, what's to stop me from killing you? Nothing gets in the way of my belly's needs.
He runs the thin, pointed end of a tentacle down to the tips of his slobbery tusks.
I will have the girl.
He thrashes his tentacles and snags Jeb around the waist.
No!
My arms dart out to hold him. The tentacles rip him away and lift him into the air.
There's land, to your left,
Jeb shouts as he wrestles with the creature, barely missing the deadly tip of a tusk. The struggle jostles the boat. Choking on more screams, I hold on to the seat to keep from falling. Jeb's right. There's something on the horizon. It glitters like black sequins. It could be the island the flowers told us about.
Go, Jeb yells. I'll hold him off as long as I can.
He grabs the chain around the monster's neck. With quick thrusts, he wraps up some tentacles so I can make my escape. One of the tusks slices through the knee of his pants. The sound of tearing fabric reminds me of the clam's horrible death. I can't let that happen to Jeb. We'll never escape the Octobinus in the water. How do we fight back? He has no obvious weakness, only a raging appetite.
Wait!
I drop to my knees in front of him, acting on a sudden idea, hoping it works.
Please free my friend, and I'll help you willingly.
Al, Jeb shouts. Give your word, Nether Girl,
our captor says, his face a blubbery sneer.
You know the rules. An oath from our kind cannot be broken, else your power will be lost.
I don't know why he's calling me Nether Girl, but I'm willing to use it to my advantage.
I promise to help you.
Not good enough,
he says, winding Jeb's ribs tighter in his tentacles until Jeb groans.
Do it properly. cover your heart, swear on your life magic, and be very specific.
I hold my gaze on Jeb's bluing lips and slap my shaking palm to my chest. I swear on my life magic to help tame your appetite. With a snarling turn of whiskers, he unwinds his tentacles and releases Jeb so he flops upright into the hull. I throw my arms around Jeb's slimy clothes. He keeps me balanced in the boat as we stand together. He's coughing so hard I can hardly hear his voice.
You should have bailed.
No, I whisper. We stick together, remember? Then, I turn to our captor. Mr. Octobinus, I know how to fill your belly. We can give cake to your clams. Jeb frowns at me, finally catching his breath. The creature eases back to his seat on a nest of tentacles, panting and snuffling from the exertion of the fight.
Do you mean you're offering me some clam cake?
No. The cake is for the clams, I answer. To stretch your supply until we get you the flute. We have just the thing to grow your clams to the size of dinner plates. I turn my face to Jeb and mouth the words, eater becoming the eaten. His face lights with understanding. He drags the backpack toward us. It's incredible how composed he is after almost getting impaled, crushed, and devoured. The mutant walrus watches, curious. Jeb opens the bandana to expose the cake with the words eat me spelled in raisins. The octobinus whoops.
An amplifying pastry? Wherever did you find such a prize? I've never personally seen one work. They were outlawed after the Alice incident. No matter. No matter.
He opens the box on the chain again. The newest clam wrestles against him furiously.
Give it here,
the octobinus says.
If this fails, I gore out your mortal friend's entrails and feed them to the fishes.
Drool seeps down his tusks and fills the carved images in slow, glistening slathers.
Oh, it'll work.
Jeb slides the cake across the hull.
I'd stake my life on it. You just did.
The mutant walrus grunts as he bends to pick it up. Breaking off a crumb, he prepares to slide it into the crack of the clam's shell.
You'll need to give it more than that,
Jeb says, inching us toward the edge of the boat, backpack in hand.
As much as you can stuff into its mouth. Yes, yes, just think of it. Clams as big as dinner plates.
Without looking up, he chuckles and breaks off a larger piece. Then, forcing the shell open, he shoves the cake inside and snaps it closed again. Within seconds, the clam starts to shake along with the boat.
Now!
Jeb dives overboard with my hand in his. A slap of tentacles grazes my legs, but then the warm water folds over us and we sink. Jeb dog paddles in front of me, his hair twirling like seagrass in the blue depths. He tugs on my wrist. I kick upward, my boots and clothes heavy and awkward in the water. We surface and suck in deep breaths, swimming in place long enough to see what's happening in the boat. The clam stretches from the size of a makeup compact to that of a dumpster. In a strangely graceful display of blubber, fins, and tentacles, the octobinus realizes his misstep and tries to slide overboard. Too late. The giant shell opens and a hatchet-shaped appendage springs out, as big and powerful as an anaconda. The muscle wraps around the octobinus and draws him into its mouth, slurping up tentacles like giant spaghetti noodles before slamming shut. The boat buckles and cracks. In moments, the clam sinks into the ocean, leaving only foam and floating debris behind. Waves ripple around the wreckage, an eerily serene ending to such a violent scene. Jeb holds my wrist in the backpack with one hand, while using his other arm in a one-sided breaststroke to propel us toward the black beach. Something pulls me downward. I pump my legs until my calves cramp, trying to stay afloat. It's no use. I let go of Jeb, afraid to pull him down with me. Swept underwater, I search for what's anchoring me, terrified a sea creature is to blame. Yet there's nothing there. The weight seems to be centered at my waist, but I'm descending too fast to find it. I flail, arms and legs straining against the downward momentum. My lungs shriek for oxygen. Jeb appears above me. The backpack descends behind him into the dark depths. I snap my legs and hands into action, clawing at the water. Jeb tries to pull me by gripping under my arms. I jerk away, fighting him. Or maybe I'm fighting myself, fighting my fear. His expression is resolute as he grabs me. He refuses to give up, and that scares me more than anything. I shake my head. Save yourself, my eyes tell him, but he's too stubborn to listen. I want to tell him I'm sorry I dragged him into this. Instead, empty bubbles swirl between us. A hot and heavy ache pushes at my chest. I bat at the water, trying to break through somehow to make it disappear. My tears mix with Alice's, and every thought blackens at the edges. Jeb's still pulling on me, but it's hopeless. We keep sinking. As I'm about to surrender to unconsciousness, it dawns on me that the weight is coming from my skirt pocket. Numb, I pull out the sponge I picked up at the bottom of the rabbit hole. What was once the size of a bite of cheese is now as big as a golf ball and growing. It glides down toward the bottom of the ocean, dragging the water with it, creating a whirlpool. I'm free. Holding on to each other, Jeb and I surface long enough to fill our lungs before the suction of the funnel captures us. The sponge is the size of a grapefruit now, and I can see the bottom of the ocean far beneath us. I scream, clutching Jeb for dear life. My eyes squeeze shut as we slam into something solid.
Al, Jeb says.
And that's when I notice I can breathe. I gasp hungrily for air, open my eyes, and blink away the wetness. The ocean is gone. Flattened seagrass and piles of wet sand surround us. Puddles of water glimmer in places reflecting the sun. In the distance, I spot our backpack. The island's black sands tower like a cliff above us, a climb we can't possibly make. A few yards away, among the debris, the giant clam sits next to a mossy, decomposing trunk and smacks its bloody lips. I guess the octobinus ended up finding his artisan friend again after all. A breeze stirs, scented with fish and salt. I expect the sponge to be the size of a mountain, but there it is, next to my soggy boots, no bigger than a basketball. I pick it up. Hard to fathom that an entire ocean is contained inside. Jeb helps me stand and I drop the sponge. It lands with a splat. Even though I'm weak and battered, a sense of accomplishment rushes through me. We did it, I mumble, hardly able to grasp the meaning of the words. We drained the ocean, just like the flowers wanted us to.
You did it, he answers.
He pushes hair from my brow.
And you almost drowned in the process.
Before I can respond, his warm, soft mouth touches my forehead, my temple, and then my jaw. Each time his labrae gently grazes my skin. He stalls at my jawline and bends to gather me close for a hug, nose tucked against my neck.
Never scare me like that again.
It doesn't matter that we're wet. Heat radiates through our sopping clothes. I weave my gloves through his hair. You came back for me. He nuzzles closer in the crook of my jaw, and a powerful wave of emotion pushes through him.
I'll always come back for you, Al.
A tiny knock of caution drums in my chest, reminding me of Taylor. Of Jeb's determination to go to London without me to be alone with her. But adrenaline surges even stronger. I touch his ear with my lips, tasting Alice's leftover tears on his skin. Thank you. He tightens his arms. His nose roots through the hair at my nape, like he's losing himself in the tangles. Our heartbeats thunder between us. Nervous shivers assault me until my limbs quake. Jeb, I whisper. He mutters something indecipherable, and my trembling hands clutch his neck. A groan escapes his throat. I catch my breath as he clenches my hair in his fingers and draws back, eyes intense. He's about to lean into me when a cacophony of clicks and clatters interrupts. We turn in circles. Thousands upon thousands of clams tunnel out from the sand. I clutch Jeb's hand, worried they're going to attack us for destroying their home. Instead, high-pitched cheers break loose. Glancing over Jeb's shoulder, I gape. Behind you. Beside the cliff-like wall, tons of shells pile one on top of another, tumbling in and out, over and over to form a living escalator. We defeated their enemy, I whisper. They want to help us. Jeb doesn't hesitate. He takes my hand and leads me toward the ascending steps, snagging the backpack on the way. Together, we ride toward the sparkling black sands of the island. Once we reach the top, I wave to the clams as they disappear into their ocean bed far below. Jeb opens the backpack to check on our things.
Maybe I shouldn't be surprised that nothing's wet in here.
He opens the pencil box before I can stop him. His jaw twitches.
What's this?
It's my savings.
Great. Not only did I throw myself at Taylor's boyfriend, but now I've lied about the money I stole from her.
Jeb looks up from counting it. There's something unreadable behind those thick lashes.
You look different,
he says, stashing the money back in the box and shaking wet droplets from his hair. Do I? I rub the skin around my eyes. Are all my secrets blinking across my face like neon signs? My makeup must be running all over the place.
You're sparkly. Everywhere.
Oh. Probably just salt residue. I slip off his tux jacket, wring out the water, and hand it over.
Huh,
he says, still intent on me.
So, should we talk about it?
He shoves the jacket into the pack. About what?
What happened down there, between us.
Heat prickles my cheeks. He regrets it. Or maybe he's afraid I'll tell Taylor. Either way, I end up looking like a jerk. It was the adrenaline. That's all. We were just happy to be alive. No worries. What happens in Wonderland stays in Wonderland, right? He doesn't even crack a smile. Just holds my gaze, then shakes his head. Lips drawn into a tight line, he puts all his attention into zipping up the backpack. I want to believe he felt what I did. These things that I shouldn't be feeling at all. But how can that be true? I'm not the one he's going to be living with in another country. I try to concentrate on something else, like how the water in my boots squishes between my toes, or how I have gaping rips the size of silver dollars all over my leggings.
Where to now?
He asks. It's possible he's talking about more than our physical destination, but I'm too scared to take a chance I'm wrong. Instead, I focus on our whereabouts. The shore stretches as far as I can see, an endless, inky desert of shimmery soot. It's not at all what I expected the heart of Wonderland to look like, if that's what this really is. There's no flora or fauna anywhere except for a lone tree standing taller and wider than a redwood just a few feet ahead of us. Intense familiarity lures me closer. Jeweled bark covers the entire tree, from the gnarled trunk
to the branches that twist hundreds of feet into the air. It glimmers in the sun like a million white diamonds. At the end of each branch, rubies well up like liquid and dribble to the ground, as if the tree is bleeding jewels, the way elves do when their skin is pierced. With the black sands as a backdrop, the scene reminds me of my cricket mosaic back home, a beauty both mesmerizing and bizarre. I tamp down a surge of panic, remembering how the crickets seemed to be alive and kicking the last time I saw it on my wall.
Winter's heartbeat,
Jeb says from beside me. I nod. You see the resemblance too? His jaw spasms.
You've been here before.
I shake off my unease and step up to the tree, kicking a path through the fallen rubies. A spot at the base of the trunk pulses behind the diamond bark like a heartbeat. With each thrum, it lights up in red lines the same shape as the birthmark on my ankle. The image sparks a memory of me and the winged boy, fuzzy yet unmistakable. Jeb moves closer and I turn to hold his shoulder for balance, lifting my left leg to unlace my boot.
What are you doing?
Following instructions, I answer, peeling off the boot and hiking up my leggings to expose my ankle. Jeb grips my elbow as I crouch down, pressing the maze on my ankle against the glowing lines of the tree. A shock of static electricity leaps from me to the trunk. Then a loud cracking breaks the hush. Jeb yanks me back as the trunk splits, the glittering bark rolling open like a scroll to expose a doorway. A soft red glow throbs and beckons from within. The pulsing heart of Wonderland, I whisper, shoving my foot into my boot again. The red light reflects off Jeb's labret.
Okay. I'll buy that you came here as a kid and are having some kind of repressed memory flashes. But how is it you have a mark on your body that unlocks anything in this place?
I hesitate, then tell him what I read about netherlings talking to bugs and what I suspect about my family curse, that we share some characteristics with the creatures here, including freaky magical marks on our bodies. Jeb stares at me. And I wonder how much more of this he can take without going crackers. You okay? I ask, biting my lip. Swallowing, he slides his fingers through his hair.
It's you I'm worried about. So how do we break this curse?
My heart bounces when he says we. He's in this with me to the end. Not just because he's stuck here, but because he's the Jeb I grew up with. My Jeb. I have to find someone inside, the one from my past, the one who used to bring me here. Jeb frowns.
Okay. According to the flowers, this is also where the portals are, right? The doors that will take us home?
Yeah, I answer, half expecting him to try to talk me into waiting outside while he checks things out. Instead, he holds me back only long enough to get out the flashlight, reposition the backpack, and take the lead. We descend a winding stairway through a dark tunnel that seems to spiral down forever.
Don't look down, Jeb says.
Why do people say that? It only makes it impossible not to. My gaze sinks to the steps thudding beneath our boots. Bones interlocked and bound with some kind of shimmery gold twine make up the stairs. Most of the bones are deformed in size and shape. Others look humanoid. I press my palm over my mouth.
What are they from?
Jeb whispers. Ancestors?
Human captives?
I scan my foggy memories. I don't remember ever learning about this. Jeb picks up his pace. We leap off the last step and duck through a curtain of vines. Instead of finding ourselves deep underground, a vista opens in front of us underneath a dark purple sky. The sun and the moon are twisted into one, the moon a blue tinge next to its brighter brother. The combined light turns everything an ultraviolet hue. Plants of all kinds, Bushes, flowers, trees, and ground cover are neon beneath the blended rays. Pinks, purples, greens, yellows, and oranges. The paler shades of our clothes glow too. No wonder I always felt so at home in Underland's activity center. On some subconscious level, it reminded me of this place. A cool gust, thick with the scent of loam, greenery, and flowers, blows across us. Then I catch wind of something else. A fruity incense drifting our way. I know that smell. Follow the smoke, I say, abandoning the path. Jeb takes my hand and helps me over a bed of fluorescent marigolds. I squeeze his fingers in gratitude. My body is starting to feel the effects of our insane water ride. I have bumps and bruises everywhere. As we lumber ahead, I can't stop thinking of the way he came back for me in the water. The way he wouldn't give up. The way he jumped into the mirror in my bedroom without a thought for his own safety. Maybe we should talk about what's going on between us, because something is definitely changing on my end. I run my tongue along the roof of my mouth nervously. I've been holding on to this secret so tightly for so long. Listen, Jeb. I gulp twice. About what happened back there on the ocean floor, I...
Later.
Glancing behind me, he catches my shoulders.
We have company.
He forces me to duck as a glowing cloud swoops over us, glimmering like fireflies.
It's her!
A tiny voice squeals over the hum of many wings.
It is!
A swarm of humanoid creatures the size of grasshoppers and the color of lima beans hovers around us. They're all females, naked with glittery scales that curve around their breasts and torsos in swirling designs. Their pointed ears and flowing hair sparkle, and their eyes are bulbous and metallic like a dragonfly's, as if they're wearing copper sunglasses. Wings flutter next to my cheek, milky white and furred with something resembling dandelion fuzz. One of them gets close enough to pat Jeb's temple, her palms no bigger than a ladybug's body.
I found him. He's my prize. Mine!
Three others screech, tunneling into his hair. Jeb clenches his hands around the backpack's straps.
No, Sister Sprites,
one answers with a voice like a chime. She hovers in front of Jeb, as enthralled as the others.
Our master said they shall be in my keep.
The others grumble and pull back. Suspended in midair, the tiny victor bows while flapping her wings.
I'm Gossamer. I shall lead you to the one you seek.
Her dragonfly eyes glimmer in my direction and brighten, as if she's angry.
To the one who seeks you.
My stomach flips at her implication. Then she turns to Jeb.
Elfin Knight, do you wish for pleasure on your quest? I can provide it, if you so desire.
Rubbing his labret with his thumb, Jeb glances at me, adorably bewildered.
No thanks, I'm good.
Giggling, the sprite flutters ahead, joining the others. We follow our luminous guides into a thick forest, weaving through tall neon grasses until we reach a clearing of lime-green moss, bright yellow lichen, and glowing mushrooms. A circle of trees reaches overhead. Branches stretched and twisted together to form a domed roof. Slivers of the purple sky break through, just enough to cast shadows. Each of the sprites takes her place inside the canopy, dotting the branches like lit candles. Their luminance adds a soft, glowing haze to the surroundings. Gossamer motions for us to follow her to the middle of the clearing, where a giant, ultraviolet-striped mushroom awaits, wreathed in a fragrant cloud. An unmistakable sense of knowing curls through me. I recognize this place from my Alice nightmares. We're in the lair of the caterpillar, the wisdom keeper of Wonderland.
She doesn't look like anything special, my lord.
Gossamer hovers over the thick smoke that cloaks the mushroom's cap, hiding whatever sits atop.
She's covered in mud and reeks of clams.
That would be because she just drained the ocean, pet. Had to be a rather laborious feat, don't you think?
My entire being shakes at the sound of that deep accent. Liquid, masculine, and sensual. It's him. My netherling guide. If only I could see past the smoke.
Her apparel appears to be that of a scullery maid,
Gossamer says, shooting me a disapproving glance.
Perhaps you should send her home and wait for another. Someone more acceptable.
One who's naked shouldn't judge apparel,
that familiar voice answers.
You well know that clothes do not the lady make.
Humbled, Gossamer joins the other sprites overhead. At last the smoke clears, revealing a hookah pipe and the crow-sized moth. Black wings and luminous blue body, perched atop the mushroom like a butterfly on a petal. It inhales smoke from the hose and releases plumes into the air. Some are shaped like birds, others like flowers. One of the vaporous designs pulls away to form a woman's head, like the carving in a cameo. As it slowly dissipates, it starts to look like a 5-year-old girl. A 5-year-old me.
So good to see you again, little love. How I've missed you.
Gasping, I fall to my knees. The caterpillar and the moth and the winged guy, they are all one and the same. They have been all along.
I've seen that bug, Jeb says. In your car. On the mirror.
He drops the backpack and grips my shoulders, trying to drag me to my feet. My legs won't cooperate.
Tut tut. You are never to bow to me, lovely Alyssa.
The voice drifts from the moth's proboscis on gray puffs of smoke. His attention shifts to Jeb.
You, on the other hand, will bow to her.
Smoke streams toward Jeb and transforms into a net in midair, cloaking him. The weight brings him to his knees. A stick slices his kneecap, where the hole gapes in his pants from the Octobinus's tusk. Blood drizzles out.
Aha! He's no elf. He's a mere mortal.
The moth flaps his wings, as if he's made some great discovery.
A mortal man!
The sprites screech in voices as dulcet as tinkling bells. They plummet from the trees like radiant snowflakes, swarming around Jeb as he slashes at his smoky restraints. The sprites knock the knife from his hand, then wriggle through the net, covering him like ants on a sugar cube. I leap up to fend them off. Get away!
Oh, don't stop the fun,
the moth croons in my direction.
We won't break your toy, soldier.
I grab the knife and try the scissor attachment on the net, but the ropes keep disappearing in my hands. I'm so preoccupied I almost miss the transformation happening atop the mushroom. The moth laughs, and I look up just in time to see his wings fold over his body. The satiny appendages expand to the size of angel's wings, then swoop open to reveal the guy from my mirror's broken reflection, the one from my memories, all grown up. The knife slips from my hand. I'm mentally trapped between the past and present. He's close to Jeb's height and age. He wears a black leather suit with utilitarian boots, and lounges on the mushroom's cap with the hookah's hose perched elegantly between two fingers, ankles crossed. Weathered pants cover his toned legs. He's lankier than Jeb, but in great shape. His jacket, unzipped almost to his abdomen, reveals a smooth chest, milky white like his clean-shaved chin. The sprites steal our knife and abandon us to rush to their master. They preen his hair and smooth his clothes, cooing and laughing. No wonder Persephone's movie poster always seemed so familiar. My Netherling companion grew up to look just like the hero, except his shoulder-length hair is blue and glowing, and he wears a red satin half-mask. Other than that, he's the spitting image. Porcelain pale skin, eyes as black as the makeup lining them, lips full and dark. With the gray smog swirling around his sooty wings, he also reminds me of Jannara's window display. A dark angel. Although he's more of a devil. I know, because my childhood memories return in a crashing wave, slamming me with a name I haven't spoken in 11 years.
Chapter 9. Morpheus. Morpheus. I say it more as an accusation than a revelation. The winged devil flashes his white teeth in a stunning smile that draws me in as it puts me on guard. He moves his hand along the hookah as if it's a violin.
Your voice is a song. Say it again.
He takes a drag of smoke from the pipe. I'm so entranced by seeing him alive and real, I don't even try to resist. Morpheus.
Beautiful. Your mom should have known it would take more than a pair of pruning shears to snip me out of your life. Though it appears she's managed to cut me from your memories for a bit.
He puffs out circles of smoke.
I'm wounded, Alyssa. It shouldn't have taken this long for you to find me.
Catching the smoke rings on his finger, he tosses them into the air, where they burst into vaporous stars. Jeb struggles under the net next to me.
This is the Joker you've been looking for? The one from the website?
He asks. More than that, I answer, not even sure the words I'm forming are coherent. We grew up together somehow. He was the one in my dreams when I was little. That's right, isn't it? You came to me in my dreams, brought me here, told me things.
Taught you things, rather. Oh, but we made time for recreation as well. I shall have to see that we continue that tradition.
Morpheus hands off his hookah to some sprites with his pale, elegant fingers. I close my eyes, remembering glimpses of us as children, leaping across rocks as Morpheus took flight and lifted me under my arms. A gentle security. When my eyes pop open again, I blush, remembering how different his touch felt in my bedroom last night. He stands up on the mushroom, wings draped in a flowing arch behind him as he steeples his hands beneath his chin.
Hospitality hat!
He shouts, completely off topic. Several of his attendants flutter over with a black velvet cowboy hat and place it on his head. He tilts it cockeyed. The velvet is accented with a band of decomposing white moths, making him appear both suave and savage.
She had no right to interfere.
He runs a long forefinger across the hat's brim. Lengthy wisps of blue hair touch his shoulders.
It wasn't her place.
It takes me a minute to realize he's on the subject of Allison again. You knew her?
Yes. Of all the other candidates of all your ancestors, her mind was the most receptive to me. We connected when she heard the Nether call at age 13. But she turned her back on her responsibility the moment she met Tommy Toes.
He sneers at my father's nickname, then he composes himself, smoothing his jacket.
Never mind all that. I see you wore the gloves. Did you bring the fan as well?
Along with everything else she had stashed away.
And she thought her buried treasures would keep you from coming. Too bad the words in the margins were indecipherable, eh? Perhaps she should have kept her mouth shut and played with the carnations.
Carnations? Indecipherable words? Understanding creeps over me. It was you! You smeared her notes so I couldn't read them. And at the asylum, you're the one who almost killed her.
I admit to nothing, other than that she was out of control. She needed to calm down for her own safety.
Of course she was out of control. You messed with her mind half her life. I clenched my jaw. It's your fault she's in that place. Morpheus spreads his satiny wings, a move that blocks the glowing sprites from my view and casts me into shadow.
You have yourself to thank for that. She was handling things fine until you came along. Just ask your father. She never talked back to the bugs and plants before you were born. At least not in front of anyone.
No, I whisper.
Don't listen to him, Al.
Jeb tries to comfort me. Your mom loves you. Morpheus raises his palms over his head and applauds.
Bravo, gentleman knight. Did you all see that?
The sprites join the false praise, bouncing around the mushroom, all except Gossamer, who sits on the hookah, observing in dignified silence.
True nobility,
Morpheus continues, strutting atop the mushroom.
Bound and incapacitated, yet his only thought is for the maiden's tender sensibilities. And I must admit, he's right.
The sprites silence their mock accolades, confused. With one flap of his wings, Morpheus glides down and lands gracefully in front of me, looming and beautiful.
Your mom does love you. Very, very much.
My legs quiver, but I lift my gaze to his, disdain burning behind my eyes.
Stay away from her!
Jeb thrusts a fist through the net and grazes our host's leg. Morpheus sidesteps him.
Ah.
He coaxes the smoke to merge so the net disappears, leaving Jeb's wrists, ankles, and neck in manacles attached to the mushroom's base.
If you're to behave like a trained monkey, you shall be treated as one.
Jerk! I lunge with an open palm, but Morpheus catches my wrist in midair. The impact rattles my bones and shakes my bruises.
There's that fire.
Morpheus cocks his head, the expression on his face somewhere between amused and impressed.
Nice to see it still burns. Hands off, you son of a bug!
Jeb struggles against the smoky cuffs, face turning red as he growls with the effort to get to us. Chuckling, our captor bends low over me, keeping hold of my wrist.
Oh, I do like him,
he murmurs.
Such a wordsmith.
He's so close that his smoke-tinged breath seeps inside me, sweet as honey and binding as spider's silk. A comfort from my childhood.
As for you, is that any way to treat an old friend? After all we shared? Tisk, tisk.
I'm tempted to lean closer, to seek more of the seductive sensations. But the desire is not mine. He's manipulating me somehow. He has to be. I thrash against him. His fingernails dig into my glove, making my wrist throb. Black eyes glitter, frigid and harsh behind his mask.
Stop fighting and listen. Your mom didn't have to turn her back on me. She didn't have to go to the loon house to protect you.
Wait. An alarm goes off inside me. You're saying she chose to go there?
All she needed was a few miles of distance between you. She could have arranged a divorce, moved to the other side of town, given your father full custody. But she loved you both too intensely to hurt you like that. She wanted to be a part of your lives, yet still keep you safe. So she sacrificed her life. That is the purest of loves.
You're lying. My accusation comes out on a wisp of air.
Am I? You're the only one I've ever reached quite so young. You and your mom had a bond, stronger than any I'd ever encountered. I was able to use her dreams as a conduit into yours. When she realized what I was doing, she went mad. But that was only temporary insanity. Let there be no doubt, The Alice costume, the tea party obsession, the tongue clocks talking aloud to the bugs and flowers. Every tick she developed was orchestrated by her, so she would be kept away from you. Out of respect for her sacrifice, I vowed not to approach you myself again.
You broke your word then, I whisper.
No. There was a loophole, you see.
The knuckles on his free hand graze my temple. His touch is warm and delicate.
You found me. Since you were the one to seek me out first, you released me of the bonds of the promise. Clever, clever girl. Now you're here to set things straight, aren't you, little plum? To fix what Alice put wrong, make Wonderland right again, and you'll break the curse that's on your family name. The talking bugs and flowers, the ties to this realm. You will no longer be under their spell. At last, your mum can stop pretending to be a raving lunatic, because I'll have no more need for any of your lineage.
My chest hurts, as if someone used my heart for a punching bag. That's why Allison said those things in the courtyard, that if I went through with my plan to find the rabbit hole, she'd have done it all for nothing. She put herself through years of over-medicated humiliation and horror because she hoped to keep me away from here. Then I went and ruined everything by searching Morpheus out. Which makes what my dad and the doctors are planning even more devastating.
My fault, I whisper, trying not to cry. Everything that's happened to her. My fault.
Al, don't let him guilt you.
The rustle of Jeb's clothes as he strains against the cuffs barely registers. Morpheus tips my chin up.
Yes, bear no guilt, because you discovered the rabbit hole and were brave enough to leap inside. You're the only one who's ever had such cunning and courage since Alice herself. And you've already managed to dry up the ocean she left behind. You're going to fix everything for your mum, for all of us. You're very special, Alyssa. Very special indeed.
He tugs at my wrist, lifting me to stand on tiptoe until my nose touches the lower lines of his mask. He's so close I can almost taste his licorice-scented lips. A loud snap cracks the air, and Morpheus breaks his hold on me. I rock back on my heels. The sprites screech as Jeb's restraints break free of the mushroom. Jeb rolls on the ground and whips his legs around. The broken cuffs, still attached to his ankles, neck, and wrists, trail him like a scorpion's coiling tail, and catch Morpheus in the spin, slamming him to the ground. The impact knocks off his hat and evaporates the smoke, leaving both guys wrestling in a tangle of wings and limbs. Jeb straddles Morpheus and cinches his fingers around his neck.
I told you not to touch her.
His deep voice is hoarse yet calm, making the hair on my neck stand on end. Morpheus makes the mistake of laughing and Jeb snaps. One hand clutching Morpheus's neck, he punches him, crumpling the red satin mask. Morpheus twists his head to dodge the strike. His wings lie wrinkled and hapless beneath him. My muscles tense. I'm at war with myself. A part of me wants to defend Morpheus, to plead his case with Jeb. The other part roots for Jeb to beat him to a puddle. I bend over, temples throbbing as I drown in a sea of distorted memories and disjointed emotions. The sprites whimper and swarm in the branches above. They've obviously never seen their master attacked by anyone. Morpheus thrusts his knees out to knock Jeb off, and they spin through the neon grasses, leaving a flattened trail. This time Morpheus ends up on top. His wings enfold them like a tent. The outline of Jeb's face appears, pressed against the black, satiny membrane on the other side. A sucking motion reveals an imprint of his mouth. He's suffocating. I burst through my mental haze and launch into Morpheus, toppling him. He rolls on the ground, wrapped within his wings like a pupa. Dropping to my knees, I lower my face to Jeb's. His breath warms my nose, slow and even, but he won't open his eyes. Jeb, wake up, please. I drag his shoulders onto my lap to cradle his head. Morpheus stands and dusts himself off.
What did you do?
I scream. He repositions his crumpled mask, then draws each wing over his shoulders and runs his palms across them, checking for damage.
He's merely unconscious.
Putting his hat back on, Morpheus touches the handprints on his neck, eyes darkening.
It was a kindness. I could have killed him,
he snarls.
Should have, actually. No doubt I'll rue that decision.
Glancing up at his harem, Morpheus motions the sprites down.
Take the pseudo-elf back to the manor. Wake him from his slumber. Make him feel welcome as only you can.
Gossamer is the first to descend from the trees. There seem to be even more sprites now. Following her lead, they drop down in torrents, a glimmering rainfall.
No!
I throw myself across Jeb. I slash at them with my fists. On Gossamer's command, they collide with my arms and ribs at full speed, stinging like hail. I refuse to move until Morpheus snatches my collar and forces me to my feet. My writhing in his grasp only makes him more resolute. His arm winds around my waist, as hard and strong as a metal clamp. He holds my back pinned at his side with my feet dangling. 50 or more sprites raise Jeb up by his clothes. His head lolls and his shirt and pants pucker beneath their grips, as if he's being hoisted on ropes.
Jeb!
I shout. Tears blur my vision when he doesn't respond.
Be careful with him.
The tiny females are only able to carry him a few inches off the ground, and the long grasses bend under his weight as he's dragged from the clearing. Some of the remaining sprites tug the backpack behind the procession. When the last stretch of grass pops up in their wake, I shove against Morpheus and break free, though it's only because he lets me.
If our time together ever meant anything to you, you won't hurt him.
Hot tears pour down my cheeks. Morpheus reaches out to catch a teardrop on his fingertip. He holds it up in the pale glow that radiates from the few remaining sprites above us. A curious frown curves his lips.
You cry for him, yet bled for me. One must wonder which is more powerful, more binding. I suppose we shall one day know.
My throat dries.
What are you talking about, bled for you?
He rubs my tear into his skin as if it were lotion.
All in good time. As to your toy soldier, spare no grief for him. He's getting scads of attention. And once he's oblivious in his ecstasy, he'll forget where he is and who he came with. Though I imagine I'll have to send him to some other part of Wonderland to keep him out of my hair.
Terror grips me. Bad enough those pint-sized nymphettes are going to